This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. Our theme today is energy. We'll be covering the fracking issue in the wake of the major lobbying and demonstration effort that took place over the weekend in Washington, D.C. We'll be speaking with Tracy Carluccio, Deputy Director of the Delaware Riverkeeper Network. Also, we'll be looking at organizational issues in regard to the anti-fracking movement when we speak with Harriet Sugarman, the Executive Director of Climate Mama and District Manager of the Climate Reality Project. We will also consider interplanetary energy issues when we speak with Professor Carl Grossman about the plutonium-fueled Curiosity Martian lander that is planned to hit the surface of Mars within the next week. All of that and more on today's edition of 5 O'Clock Shadow. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and we are looking at energy today in the form of plutonium on Mars and fracking on the planet Earth. Over the weekend, there was a major rally in Washington, D.C., the so-called Stop the Frack Attack rally that also was paired with a lobbying initiative in order to push back the industry acceleration of fracking of Marcellus Shell, that is to say, to put it under high subterranean water pressure in order to extract natural gas, methane, and other petroleum byproducts. The rally was attended by our correspondent, James Crevo, and here is some of the sound from Washington, D.C.
This past Saturday, around 5,000 protesters from all over the country, and even from Australia, gathered in front of the United States Capitol to send a message to ban fracking now. There was an enthusiastic crowd and many speakers. One of the speakers was Bill McKibben, environmentalist and founder of 350.org. He looked at this rally as part of a mass movement for the environment.
You guys are a big and beautiful movement around the country and around the world, and it is the movement that is fighting the biggest fight that human beings have ever fought, to see whether or not we can keep this planet in shape any longer or not. And it is going to be a close fight and a hard fight. Greenland in this last week has melted like it never has before.
James Patsy is from Australia, and he points out that this is a global, not just a national issue.
I'm from Queensland, Australia, and unfortunately, your dirty technology that was developed in America has now ended up in our backyard. It's ended up in South Africa's backyard, in New Zealand, all around the world. We are fighting things on a different level in Australia. We're climbing drill rigs, we are blockading roads, and we are taking the power back. Because we the people of Australia and we the people of the world need to take the power back. There's no use waiting for these people here or the same buildings in Australia. We the people need to do it ourselves.
Doug Shields was a councilman in Pittsburgh, where in 2009 a bill was passed to ban fracking.
We did our due diligence. We the council of the city of Pittsburgh looked to our oaths of office and the health, the welfare, and the safety of the people who we were sworn to uphold. And we brought before the council science, law, business, and we heard what was said. And at the end of that fact-finding period of 3 months, we made a decision based on the facts, not that the sky was pink, not from the BS, from the bought and paid for research, not the jobs and money, but our health, safety, and welfare. And we voted unanimously to ban it from the city of Pittsburgh.
James Lissack talks about the importance of this issue to the youth.
I want to say something to the youth, though. To those who, like me, are young and who feel the weight and glory of their whole lives before them. It's for us that everyone is fighting. It's our future that everyone is trying to preserve. I know that you want to live in your own world and have your own life. I do too. But what life can we have when fracking has destroyed our water, poisoned the air we breathe, and when global temperatures continue to rise to dangerous levels?
Calvin Tillman is the former mayor of Dish, Texas, before he had to leave because of the fracking effects there.
You are not alone. We are all in this together, and we do have a strong voice. For those of you in New York, I don't want what happened to my family in Dish, Texas to happen to you. I stand with you.
Lori Newbrass was a speaker representing the Blackfoot Nation.
We live where sacred sites to us to practice our way of life are at stake from the fracking. I come here today and I represent over 60,000 members of the Blackfoot Confederacy in Montana, Alberta, and Saskatchewan. That one thing we all share, and the reason I'm here today, is because everybody in the living human family needs water to live. Currently on the Blackfeet Reservation, we have multinationals targeting our sacred sites. We have oil companies bringing in with them drug dealers, prostitution, a threat to our very cultural way of life. And that's why I came here today.
This demonstration was organized by numerous environmental groups, including Delaware Riverkeeper, Sierra Club, Earthworks, Frack Action, NRDC, all to let the Congress know how important this issue is to the public.
Shadow correspondent Jim Crevo. This is 5 o'clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And we are now joined by the deputy director of the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, one of the co-sponsors of the big event that took place in Washington, D.C. And here live with us is Tracy Carluccio. And congratulations on what appears to be a significant action in the issue of fracking. It was not only a rally, but also a lobbying exercise. Why don't you tell us about what that event meant?
Well, thank you, Robert. Yes, we are really thrilled that people came from across the nation on Saturday to speak to the public on a national stage and to speak to our federal elected representatives and the Obama administration to say that we have to stop this frack attack on America. And Thursday was a lobby day. Friday was a training day where we all shared strategies and different tools and different actions that we're doing across the nation in the 34 states where natural gas is being mined. And through those events of Thursday or Friday, and then the coming together of the over 5,000 people on Saturday, I think we really forged new energy. And I feel like the success of the day will carry us through to what we need to do as we go forward. What we need to do is to turn around this ship of state. We need to turn away from the development of this destructive and dirty fossil fuel and move towards sustainable energy supplies.
I think what might be important here is the energy of the lobbying movement, because so many demonstrations and rallies for whatever purposes or good causes seem to come and go on the weekend when nobody who makes decisions is there. So can you speak a bit more about what you encountered in the lobbying campaign and what the countervailing pressures were on legislators to stop the environmental hazard of fracking?
Well, the important message that was brought to legislators during the lobby day was to remove the special exemptions that federal legislation has put in place for the gas and oil industry, and also to remove the subsidies for the oil and gas industry. We have the most powerful and the most the highest amount of money made in the world by these energy companies, and they are actually getting subsidies from us as taxpayers. Also, the exemptions from all the major environmental regulations that have been adopted over the years, sections of those laws that have been given away to allow the gas and oil industry to operate with impunity, need to be undone. The loophole that most people have heard about, the Halliburton loophole, actually allows the gas industry that uses hydraulic fracturing, injecting of chemicals down into the ground in order to release the gas, to be exempt from the Safe Drinking Water Act. It seems like a counterintuitive outcome that you would allow an industry that injects poisonous chemicals and disturbs and distributes the deep geology pollutants where the gas is held and distributes them back up to the surface and into our aquifers to be exempt from the Safe Drinking Water Act. But that is what the oil and gas industry accomplished during the Bush administration. Also, the Clean Air Act, the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, the Superfund Law, some of the most important laws that have been put in place by our federal legislators over the last decades have been basically shot to pieces by the gas and oil industry. And that's what people said to their legislators. We said that we want the FRAC Act and the BREATHE Act to be passed, and we want stronger and better legislation to be introduced to remove these exemptions. We must require that the gas and oil industry follow the basic environmental regulations and laws that this country has put in place in order to control pollution and degradation of our environment and our drinking water and the health of the public.
Tracy, you speak of counterintuitive legislation that does not protect the water table, the environment, and the atmosphere, and so on. Could that be the presence of protective legislation and subsidies for an unproven and dangerous approach to extraction of energy from the earth? Could that be because the grassroots are outspent by the corporate money trees? And if so, who's doing that?
Well, certainly the gas and oil industry is represented by very powerful lobby organizations, the American Natural Gas Association, the Petroleum Institute, the American Petroleum Institute, and then the other federal and also state organizations that represent the oil and gas industry have been lobbying for decades. Before any of the public knew that gas drilling was going to occur in the shale formations, particularly the Marcellus Shale Formation, which is the darling of the industry now and covers parts of West Virginia and Ohio, Pennsylvania, and New York, though that shale formation, nobody really knew that it was even economically viable to remove the gas. And the industry, however, had been working for decades to put in place these exemptions before they even tried to use the extreme measures that they must use in order to free that gas, namely hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling. So they were at work in Washington. They were at work in the state houses in the states that have the Marcellus Shale before the public knew about this. And, of course, they were spending money. In Pennsylvania, for instance, Governor Corbett's campaign for governor was injected with $1.7 million from the gas and oil industry. And several million dollars have been spent on state legislatures, both in Pennsylvania and New York, in order, sadly, to actually buy those legislators. This has happened also in Washington. And what we really need to do to counteract that is use the people power that we have as constituents. We need at the voting booth to vote out those that are sold out to the industry and vote in those who will work to protect us, remove these exemptions. And then we also need to support our champions that are in there now and fighting for the removal of these exemptions and for stronger regulations. My organization, Delaware Riverkeeper Network, believes that hydraulic fracturing really cannot be done safely. We feel there is already enough science that has been produced by the scientific community and by academic institutions and by the practice of hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling in the states where it's occurring to show that we really cannot move ahead with hydraulic fracturing today. Many of us are saying that to our legislators, and so we're asking for a national moratorium. In Pennsylvania, for instance, we're working through a shale gas outrage, which is coming up in September 20th in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, through that demonstration, which will follow on the heels of this one, to say to our legislators, we want a statewide moratorium. We want to stop the frack attack in Pennsylvania. In New York, for instance, on August 25th to 27th, there will be a series of events concentrating in New York City and Albany to say to the state legislators and to Governor Cuomo, do not frack New York. Don't even start here. So between, you know, these two initiatives, we're following on the energy of Stop the Frack Attack and other initiatives that are happening in Ohio and other states in the coming months. We really hope that what has been started in Washington will spread out. The wave of dissent will spread out across the nation. We will stop fracking where it is occurring and keep it from starting where it hasn't yet come.
So this movement includes the West Coast, California, the Southwest, and all parts of the country then?
That's right. There were representatives from Pennsylvania, West Virginia, New York, Maryland, Texas, Wyoming, Ohio, Colorado, New Jersey, New Mexico, Idaho, California, as you said, Virginia, North Dakota. I mean, all over the place where gas is being produced. People came and to speak up to our federal legislators in the Obama administration to say, stop the frack attack, remove these exemptions, and stand in solidarity with these communities that are being destroyed by hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling. We really have to stop the frack attack on America. Public health demands this.
Tracy Carluccio, one of the things that we've seen on other issues of controversy and the betrayal of the public good is a clandestine or a shadowy form of enacting legislation by going to one local city council, to one state legislator, and one assembly at a time. And in the course of covering that side of things, we came across an organization called ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. Is that a name that you might have come across in terms of the lobbying for the fracking industry?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we know that the Koch family, the Koch brothers, through ALEC, have influenced state legislation. We know, for instance, that models were produced for ordinances that would take over municipal zoning of gas and oil operations at the most local level and take that over by the state. And a model was produced by ALEC that was then mirrored in Act 13 that was adopted in Pennsylvania just this past session. My organization and seven municipalities are fighting Act 13 to try to remove the state's attempt to take over and let the gas industry put gas operations in every single zoning district in a municipality and remove the municipal control of where gas development should go, these various operations, wells, pipelines, frack waste pits, compressor stations, where these should go. The state and the industry wants to put them in right up next to houses and daycare centers and in your shopping districts. We fought that, and we just won a few days ago in Commonwealth Court, and the law was thrown out and made null and void as unconstitutional based on our lawsuit. Now, it has immediately been appealed by Governor Corbett and his representatives at the Public Utilities Commission and the Department of Environmental Protection, and so we will continue to fight this all the way to the next court, which will be the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. We know that that legislation was modeled by ALEC, and we know that they have been shopping around this model of having a state takeover so they can not only control every square foot of where they want to operate, but they can control every square inch of the land and the water where they want to operate and build their gas fields. And we know that that effort was modeled by ALEC. And we believe that this, you know, shadow government, which is pushing this kind of legislation and then getting, you know, their friendly folks such as the Republicans and Democrats alike, actually, in Pennsylvania that voted for Act 13 to go along with them. And this has to be stopped. This is one of the things that we hope to expose, starting with the frack attack and moving on through the state actions that will be going on the coming months. We don't want Governor Cuomo in New York, as a perfect example, to give in to the oil and gas industry in New York and allow fracking to begin, and as ALEC and others have modeled for that to happen. As a matter of fact, the industry in New York had moved in and put favorable legislation in long before drilling applications were even applied for in New York back as early as 2007 and 2008. And that was all because those folks, that industry effort and their apologists and their frontmen and then the lobby groups that give the money to make it happen were active and working on it long before us, the public, knew about it. We have to change that.
Your specificity is stunning. And finally, Tracy Carluccio of the Delaware Riverkeeper. For aside from the industrial opportunists, what do you say to people who assert that there is such a thing as peak oil, and that as reservoirs are depleted, that the cost per unit volume of extracting energy or oil or similar compounds increases, and thereby that's a good reason to have fracking? Or is there another way of looking at the overall energy budget of the nation?
We have to adopt an energy master plan that's based on sustainable energy supplies. It's simple. We cannot afford to continue to bear the cost of fossil fuel development. First of all, it's not true that it creates jobs. There was an unfortunate comment by President Obama in his State of the Union speech where he said 600,000 jobs were being produced by the gas industry. In fact, his own Bureau of Labor Statistics had verified just the month before that there was going to be 136,000 jobs by 2018, and that was just a projection. So this is certainly not the panacea that it's billed as being in terms of economics and jobs. This is not a job creator. Also, the economic implications of continuing down a path of fossil fuel development are really complex, because what we buy into is this continuing boom and bust approach to development that we have bought into. We've seen the devastation that the boom and bust thinking has had in terms of our present recession. Are we going to continue to latch ourselves desperately onto extracting the last bits of gas out of the earth through poisonous means just so we can get a short-term boom? They're finding that the wells that they are drilling using hydraulic fracturing are only lasting 2 to 3 years before they peter out. The hydraulic fracturing does not have a long-term productive life. So we are actually sacrificing our aquifers, our environment, and our public health for a few years of gas. Even the U.S. Department of Energy has projected that the gas in the Marcellus Shale at the most will only supply 6 years of gas, and that is even counting unproven reserves, not, you know, based on just data from some wells. And all of the U.S. gas that can be produced from all of the shale formations will only last 21 years. And that's what the Department of Energy, the EIA, has projected. So certainly this 100 years of gas that people are talking about and that might turn some heads to make it sound as if, well, it's worth going after in order to be able to meet our energy needs, is simply not true if you look at the statistics coming out of those who know, such as the Department of Energy. So we really need to turn to more sustainable energy supplies that support our environment and have long-term jobs that support clean water and clean air and healthy communities. That's where the real wealth is. And that's the kind of change that we need. We need to protect our property values. We need to protect our public health through having sustainable energy supplies such as solar and wind and geothermal. We need to develop these sustainable supplies so we are not killing ourselves getting the last bits of energy that we can get out of fossil fuels. And until we do this, we're really on a path to destruction, because as it's made very clear by Dr. Haworth and Dr. Angrafia and Cornell, we are contributing to the global climate downturn by continuing to develop shale gas. It actually, in the long term, over the 100-year time frame, is actually worse than coal or oil in terms of global warming contributions. So it's a lose-lose to continue down this fossil fuel rabbit hole.
Well, I thank you for your insight, Tracy Carluccio with the Delaware River Keeper Network. Congratulations on your litigation, and we wish you the best of success in your ongoing work.
Thank you, Robert, for getting in touch, and thank you for talking about this on your show.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. We'll have even more fracking right after this from Washington.
Julie Fiore and Ambry Carrigan came from Ithaca, New York, where they're students at Cornell University. I asked them why they came and how they felt youth could help the movement.
We're here from Ithaca, New York, and we do not want hydrofracking in New York State or anywhere in the country, and we're really excited to be here building coalitions and strengthening our cause to make it a national issue.
So much of this hasn't been tested, and what has been seen, the effects are just so horrific. The idea that we're allowing that to happen anywhere in New York, across the country, around the world, is just awful. And if we make a real impact here on the national level, it'll shut it down, not only in the United States, but it'll really have an impact around the whole world.
Robert Corrier came from North Carolina, where horizontal hydrofracking is currently not allowed.
Right now, there's no fracking. Our legislature just passed a bill to allow it probably in 2014, but we're going to build a movement of resistance to stop that from happening.
How did you get that kind of organization?
Well, our governor actually vetoed the bill to legalize fracking, but there was an override. We built a grassroots movement among all the environmental groups in North Carolina, the Sierra Club, 350.org, and a lot of grassroots groups banded together. We did a lot of petitioning, a lot of calling of the governor, some rallies in the Capitol. It was a really big movement of power, and they got an override on the veto by one vote.
Rangulo was a farmer in Pennsylvania, but had to sell his farm because of fracking.
I was the second horizontal well drilled in Pennsylvania, and it completely trashed my property. So I'm here, and I've been out talking all around the country, as many places I can go, making people aware of what's going on. And I used to work in the industry. I'm not an expert, but I'm not exactly a dummy about it. And I've been bringing this to the surface and to people's attention since 2005.
Where's your farm?
My farm was in Washington County. I no longer own it. In Hickory, Pennsylvania, ground zero for the Marcellus Shale.
And what about all the neighboring farms around there? How are they doing?
A number of the farms have been contaminated. There are a number of lawsuits. The lawsuits are just stacking up throughout Pennsylvania, as well as around the country.
Ed Nislowski is from the southern tier of New York, where residents are very concerned about fracking coming soon.
I'm from Tioga County, New York, about halfway between Ithaca and Binghamton, so we're one of the target zones for hydrofracking, you know, if it comes to New York State. And in reading about the issue and studying it for the last 5 years, I've become convinced that it isn't anything that can be regulated. It's a disaster. It shouldn't happen in New York State. And there needs to be a moratorium nationwide and worldwide before it does any more damage. So that's why I'm here.
How about your friends? How does the community feel, as far as you know, your whole community, where you live?
There's two townships in my county where we're circulating a petition for a moratorium. And in my township in Newark Valley, about 60% of the people we contact want a moratorium. And in the town of Owego, it's about 70%.
There will be anti-fracking rallies in New York City and in Albany August 26th and 27th. Josh Fox invites us all.
There's going to be a major anti-fracking rally in both cities, in Albany and in New York, simultaneously at the end of August. So New Yorkers, that weekend, don't go to Fire Island. Don't go to the Hamptons. Don't go to Jones Beach. You know, you go away. Don't go to Delaware River Basin. Don't go away for water that weekend. Stay home for your water. Stay home and show up in New York City or in Albany at the end of August.
Sounds of the Stop the Frack Attack rally and lobbying initiative in Washington, D.C. over the weekend, filed by correspondent Jim Crevo. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacific Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and we're now joined by Harriet Sugarman, the executive director of Climate Mama and also manager of the New York, New Jersey Climate Reality Project. Welcome to 5 O'Clock Shadow, Harriet. I guess that was a pretty important event over this weekend, and I'm given to understand that New York State and Governor Cuomo were very much an issue there.
Thank you, Robert, for having me here on your show. And yes, it was a very important event over the weekend, and one that was, as Tracy spoke to you about, both a learning opportunity for many people that were there and an opportunity for people to come together from across the country to show our national leaders and our state leaders like Governor Cuomo and in New Jersey, Governor Christie here locally, that we are concerned and upset about what's happening and the lack of regulation, lack of control with fracking, and that people are standing up and taking action on it. As a parent, and speaking to you as a parent of two teens and an activist, I find it something that I hear from the soccer fields, from dance studios where parents are with their kids. More and more people are understanding more about true organizations like the Delaware River Keeper, Food and Water Watch, what fracking is and what it's about, and that our governors locally here are considering allowing this process to go forward, be it with fracking waste acceptance here in New Jersey or in New York with demonstration projects on fracking. And as a parent and speaking on behalf of other parents, it is something that we cannot allow to go through as with lack of regulation and lack of control, and then come back later and say, okay, well, you know, who's going to clean up this mess? If the industry and our government see somehow frack gas to be a bridge to fuel, which we are finding more and more that it is not, and fulfilling those hopes and dreams that people initially had about it, that we need to actually uncover the facts and understand prior to polluting our water and polluting our air, what are the ramifications and what are the impacts on our children and us today. And we are looking to Governor Cuomo and in New Jersey, Governor Christie, in terms of the fracking waste ban that is before him currently, to stand up and to take action and to protect the citizens in our states from fracking and fracking waste and the harm that we are identifying associated with this particular type of gas extraction.
One of the issues that may apply to communities all across the country is the bare-knuckled legal fight over whether or not state or other local regulators have the authority to prevent the destructive side effects of fracking on the local water tables and environment and such. What kind of a counterattack do you see people doing across the country in New Jersey and elsewhere that would allow for citizens' control at a local level of these projects?
Well, again, as I think we've had a recent win in Pennsylvania through the Delaware River Keeper in terms of looking at the legality of municipalities not being able to say what's happening within their own borders. We have communities in New York and New Jersey that are passing local ordinances that are banning fracking it within their municipal borders and are successfully doing that, and then around the country trying to raise awareness and also to move forward with local ordinances to prevent fracking from happening or the acceptance. And an issue that isn't discussed as much as it should is, what do you do with the wastewater? There's an incredible amount of water that's used to frack each well, and where is that water coming from as we're encountering drought situations all across our country, and what is then being done to treat that wastewater, which there are no safe ways to treat that water currently, because as we had heard from the Delaware River Keeper, from Tracy, that in fact the water that is being produced as a byproduct from fracking is exempt from the Clean Water Act and was exempt in 2005. So again, this wastewater can go back into our treatment and through our treatment plants back into our surface water, and we don't even know what we're treating. And so this is another issue that, again, as concerned citizens around the country and at a municipal level, we're assuming when we turn the tap on here in the United States in the great country that we live in, that the water coming out of that tap is something clean and that we can drink. And currently with fracking waste water not currently being exempt from the Clean Drinking Water Act, we have no guarantees there. And again, we need to use the precautionary principle around the country. And I see people talking to their local town council members, talking to their state representatives, talking to their governors, writing letters, standing up and saying, I want to understand this better. And, you know, don't pollute my rivers, my streams, my drinking water, the air that I'm breathing, And then after the fact, tell me, oops, we made a mistake.
In the few minutes that we have remaining, Harriet Sugarman of the Climate Mama organization and of the Climate Reality Project, can you summarize the relationship between the consequences of fracking and whether there is an impact on climate?
Sure. Let me try to summarize it in a quick way for you. But fracking, which is the extraction of natural gas, and natural is a euphemism in this case, is a fossil fuel, and be it coal, gas, oil, we are seeing the climate ramifications from burning of fossil fuels and the creation, the greenhouse gases that escape when we use fossil fuels. So while gas may be somewhat cleaner and it's burning, and that is, again, being questioned and not proven recently by new scientific studies that are coming out that are showing, as Tracy told us, it is just as potentially dirty as burning coal. We need to get beyond fracking. We need to get beyond gas extraction. We need to get beyond fossil fuels and move towards renewable energy. We need energy. We're all demanding energy, but we need to demand that we get our energy from cleaner and renewable sources, be it solar, wind, geothermal. We need to see our government invest significantly more. We need to, as individuals and companies, support or at least give the same types of breaks that we give to oil and gas, and take away, why should we be subsidizing oil and gas companies when they make billions of dollars in profits on a regular, almost daily basis? Let's support renewable energy. Let's move towards a renewable future like many countries around the world are already doing. We look at Copenhagen, Germany, which has just gone to a 25% renewable standard, I believe, this month. And many states in the United States that are setting renewable standards, we need to move much more quickly in that direction. And we need to get off of, be it gas, oil, or coal. Any fossil fuels are not the future for us. The climate implications are too severe. And the linkages to our use of fossil fuels and the greenhouse gases produced and the climate implications are recognized by and before us by over 98% of climate scientists. And these are the people working on climate change. And they are telling us that that direct linkage between our burning of fossil fuels and what we are doing in terms of heating up our atmosphere and causing our climate to change, we are living that now. And so we need to move towards a renewable energy future, move off of fossil fuels, and try to create a future and, well, we're already adapting and mitigating the damages we're already currently doing. So more fracking is not the answer to moving us towards a cleaner, climate-stable future.
Well, thank you for that excellent summary and connection. We've been speaking with Harriet Sugarman, the executive director of Climate Mama, which can be contacted and followed at the website climatemama.com. She's also with the Climate Reality Project, climaterealityproject.org. And we thank you for being with us today on 5 O'Clock Shadow, Harriet.
Thank you so much for having me today, Robert.
All right. Also, our previous guest, Tracy Carluccio, can be contacted at DelawareRiverkeeper.org. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. Robert Knight here in New York. When we come back, we'll be speaking about energy projects on Mars.
Fracking is a form of natural gas drilling, an alternative to oil, because the oil caps fill and bring in jobs to small towns. So everybody's willing, people turn on the lights, and the drill is making killing.
Water goes into the pipe into the ground. The pressure cranks fish 7,000 feet down. The cracks release the gas that powers your town. That will frack, yeah, totally frack.
But there's more in the water than just H2O. Toxic chemicals help to make the fluid flow. With names like benzene and formaldehyde, you better keep it far away from the water supply.
The drillers say the fishes are a mile below. The groundwater pumped into American homes, but don't tell it to the residents of Subway-O. That water's fracked. We're talking benzene.
What the fuck is going on? With all this fracking going on, I think we need some facts to come to light. I know we want our energy, but nothing ever comes for free. I think my water's on fire tonight.
home. It was fracked, then he fracked until the break of dawn. With the EPA out, he was in the States, but they didn't have the money to investigate. Said people couldn't prove fracking was to blame. All the while, water wells were going up in flames.
Cause it's hard to contain all the methane release. It can get into the air, it can get into the streams. It's a greenhouse gas, worse than CO2. Fracking done wrong, connected to climate change too.
Now it's not that drillers should never be fracking, but the current regulation is severely lacking. Reduce the toxins contained in the gas and wastewater, and the people will get sick, and the planet will get hotter.
What the frack is going on? We let all this fracking going on. I think we need some facts to come to light. I know we want our energy, but nothing ever comes for free. I think my water's on fire tonight.
The fracking song performed by David Holmes. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and we continue our focus on energy today by going to the planet Mars, where, believe it or not, there is a nuclear reactor that is about to hit the surface of the planet. And we are now joined live by Carl Grossman, a professor of journalism at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury. And Carl, what is happening on Mars with the Curiosity Explorer?
Well, as Counterpunch headlined my piece earlier this week, Nukes on Mars. I mean, that's the plan on which we've spent, would you believe, $2.5 billion with all the needs on Earth. In any case, NASA is slated to land a Mars rover on Monday, this coming Monday, which is going to be nuclear-powered, powered by plutonium. I mean, this is after a number of rovers have been very successful on Mars, energized by solar power. But like on Earth, the nuclear promoters would have us use nuclear as opposed to safe, clean energy sources.
Let's just set the context and identify the importance and or purpose of the mission.
Well, it's supposed to do what the other rovers did, and that's to scurry around Mars and to take photos and to extract some of the Martian dust and examine it and so forth. It's ostensibly a scientific research project.
And it would last how long?
Well, until the... I don't know exactly. They're talking a few years.
And I understand it to be a study of the wind patterns, a mineralogical exploration or survey of Mars. And what do you say to the argument that NASA planners might make that if it's a long-term mission, that maybe solar isn't sufficiently reliable or energetic for what they plan?
Well, solar worked before. It can work now. I've been on this issue, this story, ever since, actually it goes back to the Challenger's flight.
And Ulysses, as I recall?
Yeah, I mean, I broke the story in The Nation magazine of how the Challenger's next mission in May would have been one of these plutonium space probe missions, and I was told, now we're talking decades, by NASA, no, we can't use solar beyond the orbit of Mars, actually. Well, right now there's a space probe on its way to Jupiter called Juno, a NASA space probe, solar-powered. I mean, there's no need, particularly considering the danger and the likelihood of disaster. I mean, in the environmental impact statement for this so-called Curiosity nuclear rover mission, NASA admits that the possibility of a release of plutonium on the mission, 1 in 220. I mean, if we knew we could win the New York lottery, there was a 1 in 220 chance to win the lottery. We'd all be buying tickets right now. Furthermore, if there would be an accident on launch, and one out of 100 rockets destruct on launch, what that EIS says is that areas as far as 62 miles away, we're talking about Disney here, we're talking about very important places in Orlando, would be impacted by the plutonium.
Carl, there are two things that I think are especially salient in your piece, Nukes on Mars, in the current edition of Counterpunch, and that is that NASA estimates, or they said that they estimate, a 1 in 220 chance of the release of the plutonium. Also, the point made that it is plutonium-238 instead of 239. Can you speak to the risk of using that isotope as opposed to another? And what harm could it do to a planet where nobody yet knows there is life?
Well, 238 has a half-life of 87 years compared to what we know. Plutonium-239 has this incredible half-life of 24,000 years. So it's breaking down quicker. It's far more radioactive, 270 times more radioactive than plutonium-239. Thus, if this stuff would have, and there's been these accidents in the space nuclear program. Back in the 60s, a satellite with plutonium-238 came down, and this plutonium was spread all around the planet. Dr. John Gottman long linked that to an increase of lung cancer on the planet. Now, that had 2 pounds of plutonium, so you'd got, 2 pounds of plutonium, but multiply that by 270. You're talking about the equivalent of that 2 pounds of almost 600 pounds, 2.4 pounds of plutonium-238 it had, of plutonium-239. I mean, this thing has 6 pounds of plutonium on it. So, I mean, the consequences of release of plutonium on launch, if it fell from, if it didn't break away from Earth's atmosphere, it didn't break out of the Earth's gravity and head towards Mars and fell back to the Earth, the NASA Environmental Impact Statement talked of a broad swath of Earth. We're talking about nearly all of Africa, nearly all of South America, all of Central America, good part of Asia, and a good part of Australia being affected by the and plutonium-238 dust. So this was a very dangerous mission, in my judgment, quite unnecessary. And in these days of all kind of people being laid off and, you know, the whole economic great recession we're involved with, we're paying about tax dollars, $2.5 billion for a mission which could have easily ended up 1 in 220, ending up killing a lot of people.
That's an infinitesimal fraction of the cost of the war in Afghanistan or Pakistan or Iraq or elsewhere. Our guest is Carl Grossman, and he is the author of the new piece called Nukes on Mars about the Curiosity lander. And you're actually correct about the hazard of atmospheric reentry of nuclear fuel packages from launches, which I think is a very important concern of your work over the years, as well as this piece. We saw that with the reentry of the then Soviet satellite Cosmos 954 during the 1970s, I believe that was, that left atomic residue or radioactive residue in Canada.
In fact, over 77,000 square miles of the Northwest Territories of Canada. I mean, this isn't the sky is falling. I mean, out of these space nuclear launches we have done, we've done a little under 30. We've had 3 accidents. The Soviets, now Russia, they've done a little over 60, as far as I can tell. They've had 7 accidents. So we're talking about essentially almost 10% of these missions screwing up, plutonium getting out. And my point, my piece in Counterpunch begins that World Nuclear News, which is the information arm of the World Nuclear Association, this just a couple of days ago, issued a dispatch saying that this landing of the Curiosity heralds a new era of space exploration. And they're pushing in this piece for nuclear-propelled rockets, which was an all-crazy scheme of the U.S., for nukes on the moon and nuclear... And in fact, it's just like on Earth. You can use safe, clean, and particularly solar on the moon, on Mars. in terms of propulsion of rockets. The Japanese last year launched what they call the space yacht, which is moving in space, being propelled in space by essentially sunlight, photons from the sun.
The most energetic thing in the interplanetary field is, of course, the solar wind, which can be used for exactly that kind of propulsion. Carl, sadly, this is where we're going to have to leave it for today, but it is a very stimulating and perceptive piece that you've written, Nukes on Mars, in the current edition of Counterpunch, and it provides a counterpunch for more creative and sustainable technologies. And I thank you so much, best of continuing success at Old Westbury. And what's the website where people can follow you?
Just go to my own website, carlgrossman.com, or envirovideo.com. Yes. And at envirovideo.com, you could watch a documentary I did a few years ago, Nukes in Space, the Nuclearization and Weaponization, they're quite related, of the heavens.
It's always great to have you, Carl, and we'll go more deeply into this as the landing date comes and goes in regard to the Curiosity Mars rover that you have written so thoroughly about in the current edition of Counterpunch. Thank you, Carl.
Thank you.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow, and that concludes today's edition of the program, which was produced by Thiago Barroso and engineered by Michael G. Haskins. We welcome your comment, suggestions, tips, and questions and leaks with an email to theshadow@wbai.org. And for 5 O'Clock Shadow, I'm Robert Knight in New York.